Hi, I'm Megan.
And I'm Sarah.
We're two moms with eight kids between us, and we're the hosts of The Mom Hour.
On this show, we're joined by a team of unique mom voices from across the country and in different stages of motherhood to bring you tips, ideas, and encouragement, and to help you feel a little less alone.
We all know that motherhood is a lot easier when real moms share honest truths and remind each other that it's all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to The Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 392 of The Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers, here with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah.
It's Thanksgiving week. We are obviously recording this before Thanksgiving week, but as people are hearing it, I'm like smelling pie virtually.
I'm thinking right now about turkey because turkeys are constantly walking through my backyard. So much that I'm like, is anybody going to just like eat those turkeys? So it feels very brazen.
Yeah.
Because they just strut right past my window. And I'm like, don't you know that like everybody wants you right now?
That is like, so foreign to me. This is like where the differences in our living situations are just so clear. I saw you had snowy Instagram stories the other day. Yeah. And I was picking avocados off my tree that are ripe. So it's a very different world we're living. And actually, speaking of that, I thought we could share a little bit before we get into the meat of today's episode. I thought we could share what we're doing this week, Thanksgiving week, because mostly because I want to share that I'm going to be in Mexico Thanksgiving week, which is very unusual for our family tradition. And we're mixing it up this year. And it's just the five of us. And we're headed out of town. And we're going to be gone through. We come home on Thanksgiving Day, which is going to be very bizarre. But I am glad because then that means I get the back half of the weekend, the long weekend, still to putter around my house and make things Christmassy. So how about you? What are you doing this week?
Okay, well, before I get into what I'm doing, I have to ask you two questions. First of all, do you know, is Thanksgiving the kind of holiday where if you travel on Thanksgiving, it's just kind of like a ghost town in the airports, or is it going to be crazy? I think usually traveling on the holiday itself is a good strategy, right?
I think it would be. And I mean, everything has changed so much the last few years. We will be coming home from Mexico. I would think that will be pretty
quiet. More people
quiet.
Would be heading out.
Yeah,
more people would be going the other way.
Had to work, say, through Wednesday, and they just wanted to catch the first flight out Thursday morning to be with family for the long weekend. You might see still some crowds like early Thursday morning, people trying to get home. But I feel like it hopefully will be a good day to travel. But we will land at LAX and have to drive home. And the roads could be, people could definitely be on the roads getting to their dinners still.
Yeah. Okay, the other observation I'm going to make is that you and I have worked together now for a long time, and I don't think I ever remember you doing any significant travel around the Thanksgiving holiday.
Never.
And it just occurs to me that we both do a fair amount of travel, both with our families by air and by boat,
by sea.
By air and by car, not by sea, but I accidentally said by boat, which is not true. I've taken my kids on a ferry a few times, but we aren't like churning the oceans or anything like that. But we're not like super jet setty families.
No.
And so it's just unusual. This is unusual for you to be doing this.
It is. And yeah, we've talked in our travel episodes. I've shared that most of our travel tends to be to go see different family who lives far away. And through that, we've had some great trips, but we really have not vacationed as a family of five very much. And the kids have the entire week off of school and Brian has the entire week off of work. And so, you know, we're heading into this like last 4 years of high school where it's starting to be like the number of each holiday seasons where all three kids for sure will live at home is limited. And that's bonkers. So I think that's kind of what prompted it. My parents are also traveling overseas. They're doing their own like retirement adventuring right now. They're gone a lot. So they were going to be out of town. That's who we would have spent it with anyway. So yeah, off we go. I will report back in our next time we record.
Well, I will not be spending Thanksgiving Day with my kids this year, which I'm 100% okay with. I think you and I have talked before about the fact that I like Thanksgiving. I like the food, like all that, but I don't really feel a big pressure to celebrate actual Thanksgiving on the actual day of Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
or to celebrate it in any specific way. I feel like it's always been a very flexible holiday for me. Even since I was a kid, I feel like we always did a little bit differently every year. So I'm not very attached. So I'm totally okay with the fact that they'll be with their dad that day. And I think Eric and I are just going to hang out. Probably I'll have to do some stuff with the not in-laws, like whatever your special man friend's parents are. They're not like your in-laws, but they're people.
In-laws? There's no word for
that. People that you go make small talk with, and they're very nice people, and that'll be great, I guess. And then this weekend, I'll be with the kids, and we have a few different possibilities on the docket. One being to go travel to my sister's house, which is something we've done as a tradition for many Thanksgivings. Just not always on the same day. Sometimes it's like Thanksgiving. Sometimes it's the Friday. Sometimes it's the Saturday. So that's all still getting worked out. But it'll be fun. And just a quick, you know, it's for us, it's a quick little break. The kids just get a couple of days off. So it's not like a big, long holiday to fill. But I'm really ready to have a break.
Yeah.
So looking forward.
Well, we have a fun episode planned today, and this is perfect because the Thanksgiving holiday often does bring people in proximity to one another who need to, for better or worse, get along, if only for a day or an afternoon. And so what we did for you all today is we went back into our listener questions episodes, which I think we've done 40 times or something over the almost 8 years of this show, where we answer listener questions, and we pulled together some of the best ones that have to do with mostly kids, although there are some adults who will appear in this compilation, but mostly helping kids of all ages and relationships get along with each other. So we've got a really great lineup of topics, from siblings learning to first play together as like toddlers and preschoolers, to a cousin trio who has trouble getting along. And Megan, I know you obviously have direct experience with that, which is why it made for such a good listener question. Plus friendship issues coming up at school, some neighborhood issues. So this is sort of a like, can't we all just get along if only for a little while?
Just guys just make this happen, please? Yeah. Just make this happen for us. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just noticed as I was going back through these listener questions and our answers from the way back, because some of these are from 2016 and 2017, that like the things that come up over and over again are so universal. It's like we have these sibling pairs that don't match up. They're like oil and water. Or we have cousins who like have power dynamics between them. We've got friendship drama going on at school. It's tales as old as time. So it was fun to revisit some of these. So that is the plan for today. So let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll set up our first few listener questions. If you're looking for a healthy habit to boost your day, we want to tell you about our sponsor, Athletic Greens, and their AG1 superfood powder. AG1 is a high-quality, all-in-one multivitamin, multimineral, probiotic, and greens blend, and your daily dose is just one scoop mixed into a glass of water. AG1 was made to simplify your daily supplement and multivitamin routine so that instead of having a bunch of different bottles scattered everywhere and doing all that shopping and capsule popping, you have just one product that does it all. Brian and I are big fans of AG1 over here and both use it literally every day.
So Sarah, a lot of listeners have asked us about the taste of AG1, and I have to say I really like it. The flavor itself is mild and kind of sweet, not funky or grassy like some greens complexes can be. There is a bit of a grainy texture that you might need to get used to, but you can always mix it into a smoothie instead of water, and then both the flavor and texture are totally unnoticeable.
AG1 is lifestyle friendly, whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free, and it contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals, or artificial anything. And as a special offer for our listeners, Athletic Greens is going to give you an immune-supporting free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Visit athleticgreens.com/momhour today to take control over your health and give AG1 a try. That's athleticgreens.com/momhour for a year's supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your purchase of AG1.
We are welcoming Vionic back as a sponsor today. Sarah, my Gwen tall boots are already earning their keep in my closet. Now that it's really getting chilly in Michigan, I love having my calves warm and snug in a boot, and I love even more that they hold up to puddles and rain with their water-repellent material. I mean, I am repelling water over here, Sarah.
Okay, well, over here in my drought-ridden state, I wish you could kick some of that moisture my way. But seriously, those Gwen boots are so cute. And I am also loving the fashion-forward Tenley ankle boots I got from Vionic this fall. I've worn them several times to finish off a pretty ho-hum outfit, and they just help me feel more put together.
And of course, Vionic's amazing technology makes all their styles ridiculously comfortable. Every pair is crafted with their patented VioMotion technology. The arches are so supportive, and all their shoes, from sneakers and slides to sandals and boots, provide cushy comfort and stability. Their shoes have actually been clinically shown to lessen plantar fasciitis pain and heel pain.
Vionic's 30-day risk-free trial means you can wear them around for up to a month, including outside, and return them for a full refund within 30 days if you're not satisfied for any reason. Plus, we're going to get you free shipping on your Vionic order this fall. Just go to vionicshoes.com/themomhour for free shipping. Again, that's vionicshoes.com/themomhour for free shipping on Vionic shoes.
Okay, so our first listener question that we're bringing from the Wayback Machine is about early elementary school friendships. Now, I haven't been in that place for a long time, but Sarah, you're not that far away from those early elementary school situations with Violet. So what are things like with those kid friend dynamics now?
Well, it's been so different with all three of my kids. And I really think my first two kids were just more selective about their friends. And they kind of had one friend at a time or one or two friends. And I could have told you from the very beginning from Violet that she would be the one to have, like, I don't always want to put like the drama label on it, because I think sometimes as adults we're too quick to do that. They're just kids learning how to be with each other, and it can look like drama to us, but it's real. It's real, like, stuff that's going on for them. But I could have told you that Violet would be the one to be more socially involved. And then what's interesting is she was in first grade when COVID first happened. So she spent the rest of first and second in really locked down, like, cohorts or at home. So I have seen third and fourth grade friendship groups shift and change. We haven't had too many, like, tears or like the real heartbreak that can come with it. But I know that that stuff is normal and that it's happening. And with Violet, there's a lot of shifting. I think what it looks like is a lot of shifting. Like, who'd you eat lunch with? Okay, this person. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. That's the little group. And then, like, a week later, like, that one of those people is, like, totally not in the picture anymore, and someone else is in. And there's a lot of moving and shaking in fourth grade right now. It seems, I just had her parent teacher conference. It seems fairly benign and normal and healthy at this point. But it's, I think as moms, we can't help but wonder and worry a little bit about all those playground dynamics. So yeah, this question from Ashley that we'll listen to and our answers really have to do with when that's very first beginning, like kinder and first grade, when your kid comes home and says, like, so-and-so didn't let me play with them, or I don't like so-and-so. Yeah, and I think there's this, like, oh no, here it comes, like this kind of bracing ourselves. But it's like everything else. It's, there are ups and there are downs, and there are good years and there are bad years. So it's hard as a mom. So anyway, we're going to hear from Ashley and hear our answer from 2016 from the Wayback. And right after that, you'll hear from Tessa, who is a longtime listener of ours, who sent us a question in 2016 about a trio of girl cousins. So then we'll listen to our answer to Tessa after that.
This is from our listener, Ashley, whose son is in kindergarten. And she says, I've noticed a big change in friendships and peer relationships compared to the preschool years. The days when kids would automatically play with each other just because, hey, it's another kid, are gone. I'm completely bummed out by some of the mean girl behaviors I'm seeing, even from six-year-olds. So she asks, how do you teach your kids to build good relationships with their peers, especially when your child has a personality trait that can be either really positive or be the cause of conflict, like being bossy or being sensitive, you know, more extreme? When should you step back from giving advice and let them learn versus getting involved? And then how do we deal with our own feelings about this as moms? Because that's one of the hardest parts, right? Whew, that's a big one.
Well, yeah. So again, I don't want to generalize about boy relationships and girl relationships. I will say this is not something, I did not notice this kind of thing really at all until Clara.
Mm-hmm.
The boys chose their friends really carefully. They didn't hang out with kids that made them feel bad about themselves for the most part. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And have had, my boys have had the same, like, set of friends. Each has had, like, the same little set of friends basically since they were, like, in kindergarten or first grade for the younger ones. Mm-hmm. And then for the older ones, we just moved here when they were in third and fifth. But they've had the same friends since. I think they just, maybe because they have all those brothers to hang out with.
Yeah.
they didn't feel the need to have a lot of external relationships. So they were super selective. With Clara, I will say she's had more get-togethers where they've ended in tears and I don't even really know what happened. She's got friends at school who she comes home constantly and is telling me kids are mean. And like, so it's, I feel like I'm a little bit in a new ground too. In general, I will say that three is not company when it comes to kids this age.
Yes.
I don't think a get together with three girls, I cannot remember a time it's really worked out.
I remember that from my
childhood. Someone is always getting crapped on.
Yeah.
Even with Clara's cousins, she's got two cousins who she's very close to. Right. One's older and one's littler. Well, who do you think gets crapped on?
Right.
The little one. And Clara engages in it because she's younger. So she always got crapped on.
Right.
And now she's got this young person to crap on. Clara's had two friends over before where one of them ends up excluded. And it can be very subtle and stuff can get whispered. I mean, you don't even always really see it happening. And sometimes it's perception. Mm-hmm. Sometimes one of the girls just thinks she's being excluded. Mm-hmm. So I've just kind of eliminated for the most part, except for with cousins where I'm not going to say, no, right. I'm not having both girl cousins over. They have to figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's more like a sibling group
almost
where they need to figure that out and figure out those dynamics. But for me, I don't really want playdates to devolve into tear fests. So I've really made it about either two or a bigger group.
A bigger group. That's good.
A bigger group.
I like that.
You know, if there's somebody who I've kind of seen becoming an alpha in those situations, like in Clara's, you know, Clara's older cousin is totally an alpha girl. Mm-hmm. And other girls listen to her and respect her. Plus, she's a little older.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably wouldn't have her over with, like, several of Clara's peers from her grade.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think it would necessarily end well. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing about Ruby being not a nice kid. It's more like the dynamic you're setting up.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I will say when there's been another girl about Ruby's age and then another kid Clara's age, it works out really well. It's more balanced.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it is just, like, balancing the groups.
Right.
I really try to pay attention and listen to Clara when she tells me about girls at school that she tries to be very diplomatic. She's always afraid of hurting people's feelings.
Aww.
And she just kept telling me about this girl in school and she kept coming up and not in a positive way. And then at the same time, the girl's mom was calling me constantly trying to get them together.
Oh yeah.
And one day Clara said, I just don't enjoy her. And at that point I was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
And she was sitting next to this girl and didn't really enjoy her as a seatmate either. And there was, so I just really had to kind of pick, like, really read between the lines of what she was trying to tell me for a while. And then she finally just came out and said it. I don't enjoy her, which could mean a lot of things, right? But that was her way of saying, please don't call back. Don't call this mom back.
Yeah.
And tell her, you know, we're going to get together.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is answering this question.
No, I think, I'm so impressed
I feel like I'm
how you are on the fly. So a couple of things that have come to my mind. One is I really try to start with my kids' emotional situation and to start helping with that first, especially when we're talking about what's happening at school, because I can't control what happens on the playground, but I can help my 8-year-old understand what she's feeling. So we talk – I mean, I'm like you. I just kind of let her talk and ask a lot of questions and kind of give her tools to – understand what these feelings are. Am I feeling left out? Am I feeling smothered? We've had a situation where that wasn't a mean girl, it was a clingy friend, and kind of an insecure clingy friend who was wanting, being possessive. And sometimes our kids don't even have the language to know, like Clara saying, I just don't enjoy her. They don't have they don't have the, like, emotional intelligence yet. So listening and asking questions and starting with, like, if there's a problem to solve, there's air quotes. If we have a problem to solve, I guess I'm going to start with my kids' feelings and helping her understand what those feelings are and what steps to take to get out of that yucky feeling rather than let's go work out this fight with a friend. Does that make sense? Because I feel like that will follow. The conflict resolution skills and the social skills will follow if she understands how to kind of identify and process her own emotions. So starting small and starting kind of internally. Does that make sense? It's a little out there.
Yeah.
And then also the teacher can be your advocate if we're talking about what's happening in school. And you don't have to get a teacher involved as like a mediator. You can just say, hey, can you just, you know, put on your little spy eyes and just keep a lookout? Because teachers are doing that anyway. They really care. It's probably not a good idea to go in and start right with this kid did this to my kid. Yeah. The teachers, they don't really have time for that. If it needs to come to that, I'm sure they'll help. But rather than that, just say, hey, here's what we're observing at home. Would you mind keeping your eyes and ears open at school? And just opening that line of communication, I think, can be really helpful. Remember that you are hearing half the story. And remember that they are filtering and processing in a not adult way. So just because the words coming out of their mouth might include things that sound like, you know, red flags, bullies.
Right.
If the child's demeanor, in other words, watch their cues and not just, you're not hearing the whole story, I guess.
Clara is the same thing. I mean, she's very concerned about being good and doing things right and following the rules in school, which I think is common for two of them. And so she would be coming home and every day it was like I would get a report on all the kids who disobeyed the rules, got in trouble, who's on the learning line, which is like they're like punishment. And it's hilarious. Like now I think it's very funny. Yeah. She'll come home and just like she just rattles it all up. Yeah. I'm like, oh, she'd kind of know about all the playground dramas and would and report everything to me. And I think she was just figuring it out. You know, she was just like, how do I fit in all of this? And it wasn't there was hardly really ever any emotion behind it. Right. I will say with as far as talking to the teacher, I did ask Clara to be moved from sitting next to this one girl. And I know nothing about this girl. She could be lovely.
Right.
The two of them were not good for each other. Yeah. It was not a good fit because Clara was stressed out all the time thinking she was going to get in trouble because this girl wouldn't stop talking to her, which that's her interpretation. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, could be totally, it could be much more mutual. I don't know. But the fact that it was coming up again and again and again, and there was that much stress. And then obviously here's this girl who really wants to be Clara's friend and she's sitting next to someone who does not enjoy her. I mean, I just, it didn't seem like a good situation for either kid. Right. So we, and it was no big deal to have them moved. And it solved a lot of her anxious social issues immediately, which was nice.
Yeah.
I think another thing we need to do, too, in these situations is kind of remove ourselves from emotionally, I don't know.
Identifying.
I think we need to, too much because people in life gravitate towards specific other people. Mm-hmm. We all do it. You do it. I do it. Everybody listening right now has people they enjoy and people they do not enjoy as much. And as adults, we have a lot of power and control over who we choose to spend time with. And what situations we put ourselves in, and our kids don't. Mm-hmm. And so if our kids don't like someone or if someone doesn't like our kid, it doesn't – it's not any kind of reflection on our kids or on us as parents. It's kind of just – it's not a good fit.
Right.
And as they get older and develop more emotional maturity, they might find ways to get along with kids they don't right now.
Right.
Because right now all those behaviors are so on the surface.
Right. Right.
You know, it's like you learn with time to kind of present yourself a little differently and interact with people a little bit differently. Right. But – preschool, kindergarten, first, second grade. It's like they're just like bundles of nerves.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like they're raw material just running around. And conflicts are going to be more out – like conflicts will be more extreme.
Yes.
And dislikes and likes will also be more more passionate.
Yes.
So, you know, and that if you just take a step back, that's a big step.
Agreed. And that is, again, I think why – at least what I was trying to articulate is why helping them deal with whatever emotional stuff they're coming home with – I feel like is a more long-term applicable skill than just how to deal with this particular friend or clique or group issue. Because if they are going to encounter disappointment, they're going to encounter jealousy and, you know, all of that stuff. And the earlier they can kind of have the tools to deal with those feelings and those kind of experiences internally, the better equipped they'll be for all, like you're saying, all kinds of social situations.
Yep. Agreed.
So I'm going to summarize a little bit as I read through this, but Tessa's sister and she are very close. Tessa has 4 kids, 9, 7, 4, and a baby. And her sister has 2 kids, ages 8 and 2. And when they get all together, the 3 oldest cousins, so her 2 oldest girls and then the 8-year-old cousin, have basically the 3's a crowd dynamic, which is the youngest gets left out. The oldest, so Tessa's girls are the oldest and the youngest of the trifecta. And the oldest gets type A and wants to play with the cousin. The youngest gets left out. And her question is, they're not going to stop seeing her sister, but it has made getting together with cousins, you know, pretty stressful. And she was very sensitive in her email to not wanting to force the oldest to include, but trying to take her aside ahead of time. I mean, I really relate to this. I think this is how I approach it too. Taking them aside, kind of gently encouraging and reminding, but she said when she forces the older to include, it usually backfires.
Oh, and, yeah, because then they just get mean.
Right. And the sneaky. younger is very sensitive, and she's hurting for her 7-year-old who she sees being excluded and who is extra sensitive anyway. So, gosh, this is not an easy one. And I know you have some direct experience.
Yeah, this is essentially exactly my life, except in reverse. So I'm the one with the middle, the girl in the middle. Okay. Clara, and then my sister, my brother, and his wife have two daughters who fall on either side. So Luna's younger than Clara, and Ruby is older.
They're even almost the same ages as these three girls, which is so interesting.
Yeah, they're 9, going on 8, and then going on 6. So it's tough. You know, I feel bad because when the three girls get together, I can often see Clara being mean and excluding her younger cousin, who, by the way, adores her, like worships the ground she walks on, which makes me feel even worse. Mm-hmm. We've kind of worked on a few different ways. First of all, everyone's very aware of the situation. I'm not sure if that's how it is.
It sounds like she and her sister are pretty close. So hopefully they're able to talk about it.
Yeah. And I don't know if they're on the same page or not about how to take, you know, some people are more hands off and some people are not. But I definitely have found that, like you said, you know, taking them aside and talking to them, but I sometimes have to do that several times during a visit. Just if it's once, it doesn't stick. I'll notice things happening and I'll call Clara over really quietly and just say, you know, I noticed that Luna seems really upset right now. And then she'll kind of be like, oh, mom, and give me that kind of thing. And I'll say, well, let's think of a way we can include her. And sometimes it's, you got to do, because she'll automatically default to, you know, she's being really annoying and she'll say really funny things. She's like, I love how Luna loves me so much, but sometimes she loves me a little too much, if you know what I mean. So she's got these really funny ways of saying, like, she's annoyed. Yeah. And I'll just say, okay, well, let's think of a way that could work for everybody to include Luna. And when Luna was really little, it could be the kind of, like, just pacifying her stuff, like, just humoring her. And she's gotten wise to that. Like, she's not going to be the kid playing with the junk toys no one wants.
Right.
While the other kids are playing a game. She's gotten too wise. And that was a big kind of an adjustment too when she made that leap. I will say from watching the boys having gone through stuff like this, so, you know, in the boys I've got Jack, so same family. Mm-hmm. They have one boy, it's Jack, and he's in the middle, and then William and Owen are on either side of Jack. Definitely have seen them move in and out of age groups where it was less pronounced. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's going to happen with the girls or not. So, like, I remember the boys playing really, really, really well together, and then they kind of went through a little phase where they didn't. But I will say with the boys, when they didn't play as well together, they just kind of stopped all playing together. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like with the girls now where Clara and Ruby aren't really willing to give up what they've got.
Right.
So I don't know if that's even all that helpful, but just I think sometimes you need to be proactive throughout the visit or just kind of be aware. And the other thing I will say is we try to create plenty of time for Clara to play individually with Ruby and to play individually with Luna, because the more she plays one-on-one, the more, you know, when Ruby's out of the equation, Clara and Luna get along great and they find things to play. So we try to make – and sometimes I'll even say to Clara, like, before we go – over to their house, you know, she'll say, well, are both girls going to be there? And I say, yeah. So I want you to play really well with both of the girls now. And then I've got something special planned for you and Ruby later. Mm-hmm. And so we just try to always kind of have that be like a carrot, I guess, or just something she knows is going to happen so that she doesn't have to stress about it.
I love that, because what in the long term, what we really want for all of our kids is to know how to navigate these situations. So it's never that you always have to include or you always get to exclude. It's that depending on the situation, there's an appropriate response. So there's nothing black and white about this. Just a couple of things to add, I think. With your own kids ahead of time, kind of asking them how they'd like to see it handled or what their plan is, puts some of the control back on them, especially olders who like control. And I know Tessa's oldest, she said, likes to control the situation. So to use that to your advantage, I might say, okay, we know that Violet's going to want in on this play date. We know she's not old enough and you don't probably want to include her. What's your plan for when she comes knocking at the door? How can I help you? I always say, I will support you in your decision, but you need to be kind. So then I'm kind of, and she might say, well, she can play with the baby dolls in my room, but I don't want her getting into the art supplies. And I can say, okay, I'll support that. And as soon as she crosses that line, I'll support you. And that way I'm not putting my 8-year-old in a position where she kind of panics and then yells. And you know, and then we're starting way behind. So I guess asking the child, and you, I think you can do that with a younger too, you know, what's your plan for when you feel left out? Do you want to come get mommy and I'll help you? Or should we have an activity plan so this doesn't happen? Or, you know, what's your plan? We say that a lot. What's your plan for, or what are we going to do when this happens? Especially in these scenarios, we're talking about things that happen over and over and over again. So everybody, everybody knows the dynamic. So I guess I don't have much to add because you touched on it all, but that, I think it's really good for our kids to have these relationships and experiences. And it sounds like Tessa's committed to being, you know, they're committed to being a big group of cousins and everybody's committed to making it work. So hopefully just the transparency and the willingness of her and her sister to help the kids make it work. I think nobody should assume this stuff will be easy. It's just not, right. Whether it's siblings or cousins or friend groups. And, you know, sometimes we hear we're supposed to let the kids work it out, but it's never quite that simple. I think, I mean, you and I have talked about this on the podcast before, Megan, that, you know, we want our kids to learn to work things out, but you can hear, as a mom, you can hear when it's in the other room, it gets to a point where they're not learning anything. If anything, right. They're reinforcing some, you know, some potentially damaging relationship patterns. And then if you, and then if you times that by years and years, we haven't served our kids by quote unquote letting them work it out. You can still let them work it out with some loving guidance.
Well, yeah, there can definitely become a Lord of the Flies type scenario. Also, you know, it's one thing if it's like something that's like a once in a while thing. You know, you've got like three groups of, you know, three girls you get together on a play date at your house, and then you realize, oop, this wasn't really a great fit, but I'm going to kind of let them work it out until things get bloody.
Right.
And then I won't be getting these three girls together again.
Right.
Yeah. Because like I've done that. Work. You know, this didn't work. This is family. They're going to be together their whole lives. So what's being shaped right now could continue, you know? So it's more, first of all, you want to be able to enjoy your sister's company. And also you want the girls to be able to grow up together and have a great relationship later. So I do think you're right, Sarah. There's more coaching needed than we sometimes think, especially, and I think it's even tougher sometimes when it's like family that doesn't live in your own house, because it's not your rules and you're not there all the time to shape things. And, you know, they, maybe the scenarios when they get together, they seem kind of fraught because the kids are just like, you know, it's like the special thing. It's not like siblings who are just always around each other and they, you know, you have plenty of opportunities and lots of different times during the day. So yeah, I agree. That's my long winded way of saying yes.
Hang in there, Tessa.
Yeah. Hang in there.
Okay, so this is Megan 2022. Just want to make that clear. Just weighing in to say, I think at the time that I answered that question, I knew that things would change eventually.
Yeah.
And it can feel sometimes like two steps forward, one step back, or sometimes like one step forward, 15 steps back. But I will say that now, 6 years, you know, fully 6 years later, the dynamics have changed so much. Mostly because what happens, and this is something I've witnessed with my boys and their sibling relationships and their cousin relationships, somebody ages out of the group. Mm-hmm. And it's typically sort of dramatic the way it happens. If like with Clara, Ruby, and Luna, there is a year to year and a half spread between kids, it can be quite dramatic. It was, and I think with Clara and Luna, it's more like 2 years. So it was for the longest time, Clara wanted to be Ruby's bestie and was like doting on her. And then Ruby just got a little too cool for Clara, to be honest. Like she's like a full grown lady now, you know, she's like in high school. She's a cool kid. And so the three of them can still hang out. But Clara is so happy to hang out with Luna now.
Oh my
gosh. There's we've really lost that. She's like the float. You remember when you do work retail?
No, I never did.
And there's someone called a floater or a float. Who can kind of
like swing
go between.
Or,
like a swing. She can work either in women's fashion or she can work the jewelry counter or she can like maybe fill in watch repair. You know, you never know. She can do all of it. And that's what Clara has really very seamlessly become. She can swing. She can hang with Ruby and her friends if she's invited and the environment calls for it. I don't think she ever assumes that'll happen.
Right.
But it's like possible. Or she can very happily hang out with Luna. And I feel like now that Clara and Luna are in the same school and Ruby's in high school, so Clara and Luna are both in middle school now, it's just shifted. Yeah. And it took a while. Like there were, for like a good solid year, I'd say, I think Clara actually prefers to hang out with Luna, but won't admit it because the two of them were doing like little kid stuff together or like younger kid stuff. And now they're both fully middle schoolers. So it's not playing exactly. It's hanging, but they're great. Like a lot of those dynamics have just worked themselves out. And I always hoped they would. And it's nice to know that they did.
I love it. I love that we got the update from you, and hopefully we'll get an update from Tessa too. So that's awesome. Okay, so we are now going again in our time machine. We're going back to 2017 when Rachel sent in a question about her 4-year-old and 14-month-old who are just beginning to play together, but not going so well, and kind of wondering about helping young sibling pairs learn to not just get along, but maybe even enjoy playing together. So we'll take Rachel's question now, and then you'll hear our answer.
Hey, Megan and Sarah, this is Rachel, and I have 2 little girls, ages 4 and 14 months. And my question involves fostering a healthy sibling relationship. And my main problem is that my oldest daughter, she loves her little sister and wants to play with her, but she gets frustrated when her little sister doesn't understand rules of games or how to share toys. So she ends up seeing her little sister as more of an annoyance than as a buddy. And of course, she ends up yelling at her or getting, you know, in other ways, you know, snatching toys out of the little one's hands, which makes the little one cry. And so then everybody ends up upset. And so what ends up happening is that I separate them, and I don't want to have to always do that. And I feel like with the 3-year age gap, I'm grasping at straws, trying to think of things they can do together, but they can only play peekaboo or take turns on playing xylophone for so long. So I'm just wondering if this is just something that will naturally get easier as they get older, or is it something, is there something I can do to make it better? Thank you guys, and keep up the good work with the podcast.
Okay, so Rachel, first of all, 14-month-old, 15-month-olds are the worst. 1-year-olds are the worst. Megan and I have established that. And I also want to tell you, it's about to get way better. I know we say that, but specifically, I remember 18 months being a threshold for when the younger could play with the older. But I have a few more. I do have a few more thoughts. This is really common, and it's not going to be forever. They're not going to hate each other forever.
Well, and 4 and 14 months are really hard because 14 months is a baby.
Yeah.
And 4 is that really independent age where kids are getting their crap together, you know, older kids, and they have real opinions about stuff.
And they want things to go their way. Like they know the rules. Like she said, like the 4-year-old doesn't understand why the 1-year-old won't play by the rules. Like 4-year-olds, you know, get real into fairness and the rules and all of that. Well, I have a couple just practical tips that came into my head. And one is that sometimes 4-year-olds like to help teach or help. Like if you give the 4-year-old a job that instead of expecting them to play together, because they can't, because they're not on equal playing fields, giving the 4-year-old some kind of job that allows her to teach her sister something or be part of like almost like a mommy's helper. And not maybe she won't be into that, but that's just one idea. I do feel like that's different than having them expecting them to play together. The other thing is make sure that older one is getting some time either with peers or with mom or dad where she's not feeling frustrated that she's never getting
or
to
alone.
Play or alone. So that there's some special time. We've talked about that in previous episodes, some little one-on-one time or play dates. You know, it's a great age if she's social. My 4-year-olds weren't always super social, but my youngest is. And if she's social, then even play dates with peers or friends or cousins or whoever, so that she doesn't have all that pent up frustration of never getting to play with someone her age or a little bit older who can play by the rules. So those were a couple.
I totally agree with that second one. And I think it's important to not get so caught up in the idea that your kids are going to be buddies that you kind of like almost create a backfiring situation.
Right.
I would focus on quality over quantity of time that they spend together. And I think the quality of time will be better if your older feels like she can get that, like you were saying, Sarah,
right.
that time by herself or with peers or with you guys.
Yeah.
I just feel like then she might see, then she might feel a little more generous,
right?
And I don't know, willing to be really kind to her sister, where right. if she feels like it's forced on her, she might not. And that's legitimate. That's fair, because 14-month-old babies can be annoying.
Yeah.
And so will a 2-year-old be, and a 3-year-old. That's not yep. going to go away, you know?
Yep. And we've talked a lot on the show about the personalities. Like, that's why I think the space in between your kids is only one factor, because you can have siblings spaced, you know, whatever space apart, and their personalities either do or they don't match yeah. up, and then that changes over time. I think it's helpful too. A 4-year-old can really start to understand what she can expect from, say, a 1.5 and 2-year-old as the baby does right. get older. And you as the mom can help modify games and rules, you know, like it's not, we can't expect her to do X, Y, Z. What if we change the rules to, you know, and little by little, yeah. you're just giving them skills and tools, because actually those are great skills to have their whole life. It's never a perfect match of social and yep. developmental abilities. So being able to figure out, that's why I love big families. I love mixed age cousin groups, because when you watch all that, maybe not at 4 and 14 months, but when you watch groups of kids, don't you think, Megan, they just figure out,
they figure it out. Yeah.
They figure out how to accommodate everybody. And a lot of times they do it on their own, but it takes sort of being there and sort of coaching yeah. them. I think
they need to be coached, because they don't always understand what the younger is capable of.
Exactly.
Another thing I will say, and I've made, you know, I learned this the hard way with various kids of my own and nieces and nephew groupings and pairings. It's very easy to put the onus of getting along on the older always till you, and then create a monster out of the younger mm-hmm. only by not having any expectations of them. So right. like a 14-month-old, you can't expect a whole lot of, you know, they are what they are. They're basically like a walking bundle of nerves
yeah.
And like reactions. But as that 14-month-old gets older, if they know every time they run to you, you're going to side with them, or if they can instigate and fly under the radar, yep. if they're just going to figure you out. And I think it's really wise to pay pretty close attention to how you're reacting and what dynamics are being created, because
yeah.
you don't want the younger to be the one who gets away with everything, ends up kind of spoiled, ends up whining a lot because they know if they whine, they get their way, tattling a lot. I mean, that can happen, and you don't even, like, you're just tired and you're just trying to get yeah. through the day. So you're giving in to stuff, and you're yeah. kind of giving the younger
one. Giving them a free pass. Yeah.
Giving them a free pass. And then next thing you know, they just expect that they're going to always get their way. And I just, it's, you know, I'm a baby myself, a baby of the family. I'm sure I did that myself, but I've watched that happen in the pairings in my family as well.
Yeah.
That the younger sometimes could be a real stinker and kind of get away with it. And then yeah. the older kid just had to suck it up. And that's right. not necessarily,
it's not fair.
Great. And it's not fair, and it's not going to create what you want in the end.
Right. I think that's such a good point. And I know having, so my middle and youngest have very opposite personalities. I've talked about it on the show. When Violet was like 18 months, well, pretty much her whole life, but especially in that 1 to 2-year-old range, I mean, she wasn't just a busy, active toddler who couldn't follow the rules. We would call her the home wrecker. Like, she would just wreck stuff on purpose because of that stinker streak. And Reed, being his personality, would flip out. And this was a dynamic in our house for a long time. And I agree. I think those olders need to feel secure. So whether you're helping them by, maybe it's moving certain toys into their room, and maybe they do have to have maybe a little time by themselves, but at least their personal property is not at risk. Like, for a while for us, it really was helping the older kids feel like they, you know, they were important enough that their stuff did not have to get torn up, ripped right. and stepped on by sort of a holy terror. So I right. feel you. That was hard, and it's better now. It really is. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope that better. Is helpful, because I know it's also just kind of like a suck it up and get through it as well as you can thing until they're old enough to appreciate each other, which sometimes takes a while.
It does take a while. And I think when that's all we know, then we tend to project and be like, okay, well, this is how it's going to be forever. And I heard a little bit of that in yeah. Rachel's voice, like, oh no, did I pick a 3-year age gap, and now are they right, ever going to be on yeah. the same? And the truth is, they will and they won't, and it'll ebb and flow, but for sure it will get better than 4 and 14 months. That I feel really confident guaranteed.
Yeah, me too.
Megan, we've been huge fans of skylight frames for years now. My grandma still loves the digital photos that pop up on her frame from family all over the country. But I had no idea that Skylight has taken that same easy-to-use technology, and now they've given us moms the gift of a family calendar frame.
Okay, this is really amazing, Sarah. With Skylight's smart family calendar, you can sync all the different calendars your family already uses and display them together on a beautiful touchscreen display. You can customize your display with different colors and views and access everything on the go with Skylight Calendar's mobile app. And the new chore chart feature shows organized lists of what each person needs to get done around the house. I mean, this sounds incredible.
Yeah, it is. So we got a Skylight Calendar and it has absolutely changed our morning routine. I put it in an area of the house near the kids' bedrooms so they actually get to see the day at a glance and check off their morning chores before they even make it down to the kitchen where, you know, I'd have to ask them, did you brush your teeth, and then send them back again. Violet loves that little stars pop up when she finishes her job. And since it's a Skylight frame, you can also set a screensaver feature that cycles through digital photos. So it operates just like a digital photo frame as well when you're not using the calendar. Of course, I loaded ours up with memes because I have big kids.
Okay, I love that. I will have to steal that from you, Sarah. Skylight also offers 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't love the Skylight calendar, you'll receive a full refund. And now, as a special offer, you can get $20 off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com and enter code HOUR. That's H-O-U-R, like the mom hour. That's right. To get $20 off your purchase of a Skylight calendar, just go to skylightcal.com and enter code HOUR. That's S-K-Y-L-I-G-H-T-C-A-L.com, promo code HOUR. Sarah, I just heard from my sister that they are planning to give her husband's mom another year subscription to our sponsor, Storyworth. They gave it to her for Christmas a couple of years ago, and she said it was super fun to go through the process, and they all loved the book she got at the end. It's a good reminder that even if you've already gifted Storyworth in the past, you could always do it again because the experience of using the service and the books are so customizable.
Megan, that's such a good point. It's like volume one, volume two. I love it. You know, I gave my parents Storyworth a few years ago and loved that it was that totally personalized experience. I could see having a collection of Storyworth books on the shelf, and honestly, just going through the questions was a valuable experience for all of us.
Storyworth is an online service that helps you and your loved ones connect through sharing stories and memories, and then preserves them in a beautiful book. Every week, Storyworth emails your special person a question of your choice from an enormous collection of possible options. Then after a year, Storyworth compiles all those questions and stories, including photos, into a classic keepsake book the whole family can share for generations. It's a great last-minute gift because the book itself isn't made till the end of the year.
Get to know your loved ones better and preserve those special moments forever with Storyworth. Right now, for a limited time, you can save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/momhour. That's storyworth.com/momhour to save $10 on your first purchase. storyworth.com/momhour. Okay, Megan, this is so fun to not only hear from our listeners from way back, but also hear ourselves give advice. I found myself being like, what did I think I knew 6 years ago? Like, I know so much more now, but you know what you know. And I think that's hopefully what moms get from this podcast is we're not pretending to know everything, but we will give you whatever we've figured out heretofore up until this point.
Yes.
Exactly.
Can I just quickly weigh in and say that 6 years ago, I thought I knew what was up.
Right.
And now that I've talked to all of my boys, especially, Clara does not report the same thing, but the boys do. There was a lot more pummeling happening.
Specifically, like fighting, you mean? Oh.
Physical big brother on smaller brother pummeling that I was like really unaware of. And it's almost weird to me that I was so unaware of it. And the boys like don't really hold it against me. They're like, well, of course you didn't know because the older kids were wily about it. Like they would just pummel it. But they're all still friends. It's just one of those weird things where it's like, what should I have done? I don't condone physical violence.
Right.
But it's also sort of a stereotype, especially of boy siblings and often of girl siblings, that there's a fair amount of pummeling happening either stealthily and in like ways that parents can't really see or, you know, maybe a little less stealthily. So I just want to point that out. 6 years ago, I was not aware, apparently, either that or the kids are now exaggerating it. And it could be either. Like, who knows?
A little bit of both.
So just throwing that out there because I certainly don't want to make it seem like 6 years ago me had all the answers. Right. She did not.
Oh, no. Neither did 6 years ago me, obviously. Yeah.
And nowadays, me also doesn't. I'm just figuring things out as I go, just the same as everybody else.
That's exactly right. Well, here's a favor of the listening audience. If I'm so curious if anyone listening to this hears yourself and your 6 year or 5 year, because we have not all the questions are from 2016. So we mentioned Tessa in the first half, and we know Tessa is still very much a part of this community. She's one of our Instagram subscribers. We chat with her fairly often. She's got four kids who are like teenagers and stuff now. But if anyone else that we're airing your questions today wants to give us a update on how these things are going. Yeah. When we did this last month, we did it with sleep questions, and some of them were several years old. And we did have Brady in our Facebook group, like write in and be like, hey, that was me. And like, here's how the night waking progressed. And here's when it got better. So I don't know. I think I have a fantasy of like a where are they now? It feels like a 90s talk show, like, you know, segment. Where are they now? So please, besides Tessa, you're basically required to let us know, because I know you will. And you're we talk to you more often. But Ashley and Rachel
will follow you if you don't
find you.
We'll find you.
I want to know about the girl cousins. But Ashley and Rachel from the first half, and we're about to hear from listener Sarah and then an anonymous. And you can even stay anonymous. We'll keep you anonymous, but would love updates on these next couple we're about to share as well. So we're hello@themomhour.com. You know how to find us, everybody, and we would love those updates. So next up, we have a question from listener Sarah. This came in 2020, which is relatively recent, was thick in pandemic COVID shutdown times. So the sibling bickering in her house was driving her crazy. And she sent in a question and we did our best to help answer it as much about mom managing the stress and frustration of having bickering siblings as much as arbitrating the actual sibling bickering itself, a little of both in our answer. And then you will hear us share an anonymous question that came in 2018, a really kind of sticky, tricky situation about neighbor friends. And, you know, Megan, the neighborhoods where the kids are all playing out front all the time. This weird gray area of like, is this a play date where like the parents are actually looking after the kids in their front yard, or is it just a free for all? And this anonymous listener had a tricky situation with not wanting a relationship to progress to playdate level because being pretty uncomfortable with the other parents. But yet kids are still running around in the front yard. And basically, like, how do you distance yourself from one of those relationships? So we will hear first from Sarah and then from anonymous.
Hi, Megan and Sarah. My name is Sarah, and I'm a longtime listener of the show. I have two daughters. They're in kindergarten and third grade. And my question for you today is about sibling arguments. Lately, their arguing has turned into something that I just don't think is good. Sometimes they're arguing, you know, it's normal. And sometimes she's sitting too close to me. She might want to use my toy is just all I hear. I find that day in and day out, I'm saying, stop fighting so often. And I think that we're in need of some fresh ideas. Now, I will say we are homeschooling this year, so this is probably making it a little harder for them. But do you have any tips or tricks, things that you've used when your kids just won't stop fighting? I want them to have healthy conflict resolution together, but I also want to encourage general kindness towards each other instead of automatically getting frustrated over the tiniest of things.
Okay. So, Sarah, you are not alone. I know there are many, many moms nodding their heads right now with just the annoyance of listening to bickering. And it sounds like they're homeschooling and many people are virtual schooling. And this episode is coming out. Even if your kids have been in childcare or school, we're going into kind of Christmas break time soon. So listening to the fighting is hard. So validating that, you are not alone. I know we've said this in previous episodes, but I just want to say again, I believe that some sibling personalities really will almost be oil and water or in conflict their entire growing up, and others move in and out of phases. And I've seen both of this. I've actually seen ones that I thought were oil and water forever go through good phases. Either way, it's not your fault. Like, it's not something you are doing or not doing. I think we're going to talk about some tips and boundaries for yourself so that you can enjoy your life as a mom. But I would encourage you to not think of this as something that you can or should fix, because sometimes personalities just kind of rub up against each other and might forever, or they might not forever. Either way, I don't think it's your fault, and I don't think it bears on an adult relationship. So I'm very close with my siblings, and with one of my siblings, I don't ever remember getting along until later high school, but that's practically adulthood. Like, So right? I guess just to know that. So maybe it's more about like your own tips and tools and tricks and all of that. The first tip that I thought of is to make sure that each of those kids is getting some one-on-one time with the adults in the house at some point. I know that's really hard during COVID, but just remember that a kindergartner and a third grader have very different needs and abilities and interests. And so I think sometimes when kids haven't, when they've had to sort of set aside or compromise their natural inclinations, which for the third grader might be more ready for more advanced and more interesting stuff. And the kindergartner is still so little. And when they have to meet in the middle always, and they don't get to just feel like they get all the adult attention for a little bit, I think that can make fighting worse. It's not a silver bullet. It's not going to fix it. But if you just have as a priority, just to make sure, whether it's alternating bedtimes and giving one of them like an extended reading time, it doesn't have to be elaborate. It doesn't have to put strain on your life as a mom, but think about that one-on-one connection for each individual, because I really do think there's a correlation between that and the sibling bickering. And I know it's hard. When the bickering is happening, I was going to say, I like to stay like 75% like disengaged and aloof, and like 25% present, but just like hovering. And I listen for a distinction between the kind of bickering that I can ignore, which is usually like where someone's annoyed, the other person's aggravating them, but it tends to shift with the day or the mood or the situation. Like sometimes one is kind of picking on the other, and sometimes the other is the aggressor. And if it seems like there's relatively a balance there, I tend to ignore a lot of that, or I just take steps for my own sanity. So I might leave the room or, you know, something like that. If there's a persistent relationship dynamic that really feels unhealthy, and that would be for me, it would be like, you know, one is being truly domineering and bossy all of the time, and the other one's resorting to like bad behavior or whining or tantrums, and it just seems like it's the same dynamic, I tend to ignore that less. And I might just try to proactively not put them in that situation. And I know that's hard and a little bit vague, but you know, when you baby proof, like when, you know, when you have a 1.5-year-old and you look at a room and you know the problem areas, right? Like you kind of go around and you kind of make sure that they can't get into too much trouble. I almost feel like with sibling relationships, we, at least with my kids, I know the scenarios that are not going to end well. It's usually when Violet feels like she's out of her league and she feels like she has to perform or be as good as the big kids. And it's a recipe for disaster. So I might steer them into an activity that's not going to create that dynamic. So I guess that whole piece of advice is be listen and kind of be like a student of your kids fighting, and you might be able to separate what's ignorable and what's preventable, I guess.
With older kids too, and one thing, and this is totally a generalization which may or may not actually play out, it's just something I've witnessed. I do think that close in age same-sex siblings tend to have those really, really bickery relationships, sometimes more than other kinds of configurations, mm-hmm. which would be like further apart in age or opposite genders. Like I've seen that play out a little bit differently. And the thing that you're talking about, these dynamics, so just something to look for, or to, I guess, validate that it can be normal for two, you know, sisters 2 years apart to like bitterly fight, or mm-hmm. two brothers 2 years apart to punch each other a lot or whatever. I've seen those play out again and again and again. But the other thing is those dynamics, like kids learn what works and what doesn't work. They're very astute, mm-hmm. and they will retreat to their dynamic of choice, which sometimes means some kids will go real quiet and not fight. And those kids, it looks like they're being rewarded because no adult is calling them out for being obnoxious mm-hmm. or fighting or whatever, but actually they're being punished really in a way because they can disappear, or they can get real quiet and sneaky, and they can become silent instigators. Mm-hmm. So like listening is really important, but you can't always trust your ears or your adult interpretation
right.
of the situation.
Like the loudest one is not necessarily the aggressor.
Yeah, just because yeah. one is screaming doesn't mean they started it, and they might be the most annoying in the moment, but that doesn't mean they're at fault. sibling dynamics are very complicated.
I agree.
Is what I'm getting at here. And they will outgrow it to some degree. And most of the time, it's not going to be like damaging.
Right.
But it is a thing.
Yeah. No. And it's hard when you have to listen to it when they're in your house. It's like, it's such a bummer. I use the word buzzkill a lot. And that's not really like, I don't actually have a buzz going that anyone is killing, but it puts a damper on the mood. So I can validate that. My last couple of things, I was just going to say, you know, provide some opportunities for success. I will do things like, I will come right up adjacent to bribes and threats without ever really calling something a bribe or a threat. So I will say, for example, I need some help with dinner in the kitchen. So your choice right now is either to go play well with each other. And that includes helping younger siblings and including them, or I'll find a job for you in the kitchen. Totally up to you. Really what I'm saying is play nice or I'll put you to work. But I kind of phrase it in a way like you have a choice of two activities. One of them involves getting along with each other and staying out of my business. So you might have some little tradition or some little activity that you know they can do well together. Just like you know the things that will trigger some fighting, you might know some things that they really can do well together. And then look for opportunities to kind of complement that success and complement the older one. Thank you so much for being patient, because I know you were ready to move on from that game and you helped your sister because she was ready. And then thank the younger one. You know, I know that was hard for you and I know you wanted to hit her, but you didn't. And I noticed that. So look for all those opportunities to kind of, you know, praise the progress and acknowledge when they get along. And, you know, I've even told my kids, it bums me out to hear this. Like, I know you love each other. I know it's all going to be fine, but it bums me out. So just so you know, this is hard for me to listen to. And I think that's okay for kids to know too, that like the dynamic they're bringing has an effect on the whole house. Now, if they're stuck in a truly like kind of ugly pattern, they're not going to be able to fix it just to give you a better day. But I think the older kids get, and you've been really good about giving this advice, Megan, like the older kids get, it's okay to tell them like, I want a more peaceful house. Like, I don't want you to fight in this room. So I think that's a little bit more as they get older, but I think it's okay for them to know that it's a bummer to have to listen to.
They might not act on it when they're little, but it's okay for them to know it at any stage, I think. And, you know, as they get older, they'll figure out how to incorporate, like how to control their behavior, which will be harder when they're small. But
exactly. I agree. Okay, we are going to take a question. And this listener asked to remain anonymous. And this is kind of a challenging issue. So I'll paraphrase here. But this listener has three kids and her neighbors have three little kids and the kids play outside in front in the cul-de-sac all the time. I can relate to that. We have a very like front yard neighborhood here too. We don't have a cul-de-sac, but and the families get along great. But the father of the other family has on more than one occasion parented her kids, this listener's kids, in a way that felt like yelling. So first her boys came home and said, "Mom, the dad, you know, across the cul-de-sac is yelling at us. He's mean." And it sounds like she kind of carefully watched the situation. It sounds like she observed it. Her husband observed it and kind of validated her kids, saying this is not like they weren't in danger or being abused or anything. But the guy next door, the father next door is reprimanding them in a way that did not feel good to her kids. And, you know, after observing it, did not feel good to her husband. Is that kind of how you read this, Megan?
Yeah, for sure. Yep. And so now she's trying to figure out like kind of how to manage that friendship. It sounds like she doesn't want the kids to stop playing together. She just doesn't want them to sort of be like alone in each other's backyard.
Right. So it's this whole front yard versus in the house thing. And I can see this playing out in my neighborhood a little bit too. It's like, it's one thing if everybody's playing out front, because it's like neutral territory and the parents are usually there, especially when there's little kids around. But if it comes to like, hey, come inside my house, let's play video games, or let's go in the backyard, or let's like go up to my bedroom, that takes the playdate to a new level. And so what this listener has done so far is, it sounds like this was the beginning of the school year. So she used the excuse like, hey, we're just going to kind of take a break from all this extra playtime to get used to the new school year, which, first of all, I love that excuse, because it's a really good excuse. It's pretty true. Like, it is a good time to kind of reset the playtime routines. So I think that was a great first step to just say, OK, we're going to take a break from so much playtime. But now I think what she's wondering is like, how do you kind of break up with this family? It sounds like she does think a breakup is best. She does not want her kids over there in their backyard being parented by these other
parents that she doesn't feel good about, but she doesn't want to totally lose the relationship because they're neighbors and friends. That's kind of how
I'm doing it. Yeah. Yeah. So first of all, I will say that the break, I think, will make it much easier for you to move forward in a more restricted way. Like, yeah. And I guess the question I would have for Anonymous is, what are you going to say when the neighbor kids say, you know, can you come into the backyard?
Right.
Do you say, this isn't a good time, we'll talk later? I mean, I think I think there's many ways you could handle this. I think that you could just do the perpetual put off, which I've done.
Yeah.
Like, just perpetually put off. It's never a good time. There's always something else going on. Sorry. Or even, you know, if it's a kid asking, it's kind of easy. Sometimes kids don't always ask a lot of questions about like why something won't work. And you can just say, no, I'd rather you guys stay up front and play and ride your bikes. And you don't have to say anything more than that. The question is, what if the parents ask or are pressed? How willing are you, Anonymous, to be really honest about the reasons? And are you willing to lose this friendship for yourself? That's like kind of where it gets tricky. And Sarah, I don't know if you've had this situation before. I've handled different things different ways. And I've only ever had one family where I completely like cut off contact. Yeah. And it was pretty egregious.
So I mean, I feel like I would white lie for a long time in this situation. I mean, and maybe I'll get flack for saying that, but especially because it sounds like the two moms get along well, the families get along well. So I think I would do the perpetual put off. She already did a great thing by using kind of a true excuse. Like, hey, it's the beginning of the school year. We're going to cut back on the backyard play dates. I think I would continue to add those types of harmless little white lies. Like, gosh, our schedule's been so busy, or we're doing a new dinner time routine, so we're all going to be inside at 5 o'clock. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever you've got to do. I mean, I don't know that that's the right thing. I think that's how I would handle it. I also think it would be interesting to watch her kids. I think she was really smart to watch her kids' reaction. She didn't have a knee-jerk reaction to this. Like, she didn't say like, oh my gosh, that dad yelled at my kids once and we're never going to be friends again.
Right.
It sounds like her boys on more than one occasion said, you know, the dad next door is yelling at us when we're over there. And then she took the time to observe. So I would continue to observe her boys. They're 7 and 9. So they're old enough. And if they're not missing out on those, if they're not like crying and whining to go over to the neighbors to play upstairs, they're probably ready for their own different friendships to evolve. Yes. And it's probably a really natural time for the families to go their separate ways a little. If they are missing their buddies, I might pay attention to that too. And maybe there's a way to like, the thing with neighbor play dates is it's so hard because they're almost never scheduled. They just happen.
They just happen.
But maybe there is a way to plan something fun on neutral territory. Like, hey, we're all going to the park. Do you guys want to come? And just, you could then sort of, have the kids get to be able to see their friends, so you're not depriving them of those relationships if in fact they're really missing them, but you're arranging it and you're just being that little bit of proactive to do it on neutral territory. And then I don't know. Yeah. I think the big question is, what if either the kids themselves or the parents across the cul-de-sac say, hey, what's going on? Are you avoiding us? Or, hey, mom, why don't we ever get to play together with them anymore? And that's the big question, is like, how honest are you in that moment?
Yeah. And I think I think that looking at the age difference between the kids, it is also very natural that the kids, assuming, you know, your Anonymous's 9 and 7 year olds aren't super bummed out about this kind of waning friendship.
Yeah.
And it sounds like maybe it doesn't sound like she's pushed it too hard. And also the boys know that there's a reason mom is doing this. Like, the boys are in on it.
Right.
Right. So like they understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's very natural for kids to kind of start pulling away from neighbor friends when they have friends their own age, maybe, or they get involved in activities outside. So, I think that that's a really good plan. I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense, Sarah. And I have to say, my feeling is the chances of these parents actually putting them on the spot is very slim.
Yeah.
I mean, unless they were best friends and it just totally ended, I don't see it happening.
I agree. I think this is probably one where you can, naturally, organically, and safely extract yourself without too much drama. Maybe we should spend a minute, though, Megan, talking about this idea of other people yelling at your kids. Has that ever come up for you, or have you? Because that's kind of a specific thing. And I actually have memories as a kid, because I did not grow up in a house where anyone yelled like that. I have memories as a kid of being very, very intimidated by other adults who had a more yelly tone. Yeah. And I was never like it. Nothing ever escalated by any means. I was never like harmed or anything, but it's intimidating if you are not from a yelly house and someone else is dad or mom. Yeah. I remember a mom in particular that would just yell at her kids, and it was scary as a kid.
Yeah, and I think too there's a spectrum, right? So if you come from a house that's very calm and very peaceful and people don't raise their voices very much or whatever, I mean, I could sound yelly to some kids because I will be the kid who's like it, or the mom who's like it, nope. What you're doing right now, or I'll see a kid and I'm, you know, at the pool and I'm like walking feet. Cause I can't help myself.
Yeah. You are not a yelly mom though.
Well,
but yeah, I know what you mean.
But I raise my voice. And I think sometimes even that can be a little startling. So I think remembering that there's a spectrum is one place to start, and trusting your gut and your kid's gut. I mean, there's a difference between a kid being a little taken aback because someone speaks to them a little differently than they're used to, or has a different house rule, which is normal. Right. And actually a good thing. And someone being to the point where you're like, this is not okay. And this is making my kid feel bad, not uncomfortable. Yeah. Uncomfortable, I think, can be okay. It's like, it's getting used to something new. But like, when it's uncomfortable to a, this is not right, and I feel poorly now because, and I don't want to be there, or I'm stressed or whatever. I will also say, to flip this the other way, the family that I grew up in was, we weren't yelly people, but we're loud and,
yeah,
you know, and Jenna's parents were so quiet, mm-hmm, that I like had a really hard time around her parents for a long time. I thought they didn't like me. So,
yeah,
which is kind of funny, right? It's just like opposite ends of the same token.
Yeah.
Which is funny to know them now, you know, 25 years later, and just to realize that her dad just doesn't speak a lot. And right. So he probably liked me all along. But so there's discomfort, and then there's the other thing.
Yeah, no, I think that's really good. And they're also, this whole situation is taking place at an age where kids are starting to be more independent, and they will be around, yeah, other people's parents more. If I were this listener, I would also feel really, really good about the fact that her boys came to her and said,
yeah,
wait, I don't like the way that dad talks to me. I mean, that is what you want to encourage. Like, you want those kids to continue to come to you and say, hey, so-and-so's house is weird. I don't like it because of this. And some of the time that may just be their naive interpretation of a family that's different, but sometimes it may be a red flag for something, and you want to encourage that. So I think she should feel really good about the fact that the boys have come to her, and the boys are really lucky that she and her husband are taking it seriously enough. So it's like a sticky situation, but I feel like it's one that hidden in here are some good nuggets of learning and growth and all of that.
Yeah.
All right, Megan, this is 2022 Megan and Sarah again. That was really fun and hopefully helpful for those of you who are navigating any kind of tricky get along situation. So I wanted to throw out a call for listener questions, new ones that are holiday themed. Megan, we are going to be doing a holiday edition listener questions this year. We don't do that every holiday season. We've done it like every other year or so. But if you send us your listener questions that are holiday themed before December 5th, Monday, December 5th, we especially love the voicemails. And hopefully after listening today, you kind of hear how fun it is to hear from moms all around the country and the world. So send us your listener questions to hello@themomhour.com. Those holiday themed ones, get them in before December 5th. And we are doing a whole brand new episode, not from the archives this time, but brand new questions and answers later in December. So get those in.
Can't wait for that. Also, happy Thanksgiving to everybody who is celebrating. I know we have some international listeners who either they don't do it or it's a totally different time. Right. So for you, happy regular week. We will be back next Tuesday with House Rules for Gifting and Giving. That's where we ask our community for their house rules. And I'm always blown away by how smart, yeah, and creative and resourceful the moms in our community are. So look forward to that. And we will talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to The Mom Hour. Everything we talked about in today's episode is available at themomhour.com. And hey, while you're there, you can find more than 500 podcast episodes, plus articles, playlists, and resources about motherhood and parenting at every stage.
And if you like today's episode, we'd love it if you would take a minute to share the show with another mom in your life. You can also find us on Instagram @themomhour, chatting and interacting with listeners between episodes.
Thanks for being here, friends. We'll talk to you soon.